We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
What's up, RotoViz listeners? It's Colin Kelly here, executive producer of RotoViz Radio and one of the co-hosts of the RotoViz Overtime podcast. I just wanted to drop by and say thank you, as always, for listening into another RotoViz Radio production. As a loyal podcast listener, you can save yourself 10% off a RotoViz NFL pass right now at rotoviz.com/podcast or by simply adding the code RVRadio2021 at checkout. That'll get you access to all of the content and tools on the RotoViz website, the best tools and content in the business for the best listeners in the business. As always, we do appreciate you listening to each and every show. And if you do have 5, 10, 15 seconds to spare, please drop a rating for today's show on your favorite podcast app. It is much appreciated. With all that said, thank you once again for tuning in. I hope you have a great day. Now let's get back to the show.
Breaks a tackle, watch out! Burst of speed! Look at this freshman!
Welcome to the home of professional football, Canton, Ohio.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the College to Canton podcast, the perfect show for any and every college football and NFL fan. I'm your host, Travis May, and you can find me on Twitter at FF_TravisM and Titan Travis on Clubhouse. If you're joining us for the first time, College to Canton is a show about the journey of the best football players and prospects from college football, recruit all the way to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. We always talk some fantasy football since this is a RotoViz Radio podcast, but we always make sure to dive into some real college football and NFL analysis too. And today we're taking a look at the past, the present, and the future all at once. Basically, you know, taking a look at some of the players from the past in this whole prospecting thing that we hit on or missed on as a community in terms of consensus and how we rated players years before they made it to the NFL, and also individually, how we have improved in our own process over the years in grading out these prospects and watching the film and learning what we can from analytics. And really going to get into some players that are still up in the air that we liked, or some players that we're pumped about in the future as well that are still in college football and still could rise into NFL stardom, and maybe a couple ways to help you guys predict NFL future success better yourselves. And to help me jump into this topic, I'm actually joined by a good buddy of mine, John Lobb. You guys may remember him. He's actually been on the show before. You can find him on Twitter at GridironSchol91. That's Gridiron, and that's S-C-H-O-L-91. He does everything college fantasy football and NFL fantasy football. He's with AFF Diehards. He co-hosts the CFF on campus and the draft seminar, with I guess it's with NFL Draft Bible, right? Is that
yes.
correct? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so you've been doing a whole bunch of stuff with the Football Diehards crew for a while and everything. I mean, we were just talking about pre-show here, just how long you've been playing college fantasy. You love the process of players moving from college to the pros. And that's really all this show is about. So thanks for joining me, man. You doing all right?
I'm doing great, man. Made it through the pandemic, made it through the school year. The college fantasy football season last year was the most difficult in my 12 years of playing fantasy football. You know, the draft process was a challenge this year without the combine. But right now, this is my favorite month because I don't have any tense deadlines. The draft season of the summer hasn't come about yet. So now I get to really study college players, and I'm doing it on two levels. One, for my college fantasy football rankings. So there are players that have no chance at NFL success, but are very important in college fantasy football. So I gotta study them, look at them. And then obviously at the same time, I've done some Debbie rankings. I have my Debbie rankings posted. I have my model. So I get to work a little slowly, but on two fronts, which also end up preparing me on the front end for the draft season come next January. So I feel a little ahead of most people because I kind of have a feel already for the next draft class. Obviously, things change. But I like this time of the year because I get to watch tape at my leisure and at my pace right now.
Yeah, and that's a great place to be. Like, I mean, this is a fun time of year because you can work on different projects and different – I mean, that's what I've been doing. I've been really delving into predicting future capital based on several other variables across a few different positions and really digging into quarterback metrics and things like that. I mean, it's fun just nerding out about all this stuff. And this is a great time of the year because there's not a whole lot of new information right now. Yes, we're, you know, the NFL and the dead cap money date that just passed. Yes, that's going to generate some trades. There's going to be a few names that get signed here and move in the coming weeks. And college football recruiting just opened back up. You know, players can finally actually visit campuses. Like this whole dead period thing, like that's finally over. And that happened at the same day as the dead money thing for the NFL. So there's going to be some newsworthy things that happen. But realistically, until like camps open up in mid-July, there's not going to be a ton of new information that we're trying to sift through. So it's good, but I love to take this time and just dig into, well, how can I improve my process? How can I get better? How can I get better at this whole predicting the future thing that we like to think we can do when it comes to fantasy football, when it comes to the NFL draft, when it comes to college players actually panning out? And so I think one of the best ways we can get better at that is looking back at the past, looking back at where we hit and how we missed and what may have caused that, and really looking at some players that are right now still up in the air, like that we might actually learn from that could hit one way or the other, like in this incoming rookie class or, you know, freshmen or sophomores in the NFL. And so that's what we're going to do. We're going to look at some of our hits in the past and some of the misses in the past and see what we can learn just live on the show. We're going to figure this out together, John. We are both going to be better men at the end of this podcast and when it comes to this whole prospecting thing. So you've been playing for a long time. I've been playing for a long time as well, not quite as long as you. And I haven't really been
old.
And I just haven't been digging into Devi as long. But you know, I like to use names that I think a lot of people would definitely be familiar with, that are still in the prime of their NFL career today. And so, I mean, when I think of like players that I hit on early on in the process, I think of guys like Juju Smith-Schuster, like who I had as a true freshman at USC, Dalvin Cook, who I had as a true freshman at Florida State, like guys that I was just like, I was so excited just to see them pan out and actually see their careers come to fruition. And there's this huge success and this huge value in fantasy football. Are there some names that you always gravitate towards that you had several copies of in the leagues that you played?
Yeah, the first one would be Jerry Jeudy. I mean, I'm biased towards Jerry Jeudy. I drafted him in a Devy and in a dynasty league his freshman year at Alabama. That's how much I like Jerry Jeudy. And that's what I kind of like about Debbie, right? So I've had Jeudy. So that's 3 years at Alabama, and now I have him in a dynasty league at Denver. So I've been actually watching Jerry Jeudy for 4 years now. Amon-Ra St. Brown. I mean, I've been looking at USC receivers for as long as I can remember. Now, they're not Alabama good or LSU good, but in general, USC receivers get draft capital. They get drafted. A wide variety of success. A guy like Nelson Aguilar, we could debate how successful or not is he. But I remember him. I'll tell you who really drives me crazy. N'Keal Harry. Man, I had N'Keal Harry, dude. I mean, the size. I stay up way too late watching film of the Pac-12. He obviously dominated. I understood watching the film. Separation was not great at the college level. But I felt with maturity, better coaching, with his physicality and size, I felt he could win in other areas than just separation.
Yeah.
And then he landed in New England, and you're like, wait a second. He's in a really good situation as far as his organization is concerned. I feel good about this young man, and it's just he has not even come close. Like, so you have Jeudy on one side and N'Keal Harry on the other side. So I've had to say, why did one work? Why did the other not work? Let me get better in my process. So, but that's how we get better at these things. What did I see? What did I think? And I always try. The hardest thing for me, Travis, when I go back, I separate the profile from the NFL results. You could like a player's profile and like the film. We can't control off the field. We can't control maturity.
Yeah.
We can't control coaching staff.
We can't know all that. You know, it's just like where we are. All that,
right?
Yeah.
So I should have been more aware of N'Keal Harry with separation, and I should have dinged him more. But at the same time, he had first-round draft capital. So when he pops in my model, when I love the film, and then he has first-round draft capital, right? You feel pretty good about your analysis.
Yeah.
And then it gets all blown up.
Yeah.
I have little hope, but we're at the end now, Travis, as far as N'Keal Harry.
Yeah. And we all have misses. And I think back to names that, they're not even in the league. A couple of them aren't even in the league at this point, but like Duke Williams, like DeShaquille Williams. Do you remember that dude?
Oh yeah.
Dude, he was Duke Williams, like for Auburn. I like Auburn. And I think years and years, maybe it was 2013 or 2014 or something like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, no, I was pumping him up. I was grabbing him in a couple of different spots. And I was like, he's going to make it. And then he just like completely went off the deep end with behavior stuff, like, and just, just torpedoed. And he ends up like in the Canadian Football League or something, like, and like a couple years ago, he resurfaced on the Buffalo Bills. I was like, holy cow, that guy's still alive. But, we all have those misses. Like even back in the day, I think early career, Thero Cooper. Like I even had a couple of him. I think it was maybe back 2015. And I was sure he was going to be a thing. And then I watched his final season. I really dug into his final season. I was like, oh my gosh, he's actually not good. Crap. and they're just process things. You improve, right? I mean, I think early on when I got into this, I really relied on a lot of tape, and I relied on a short list of things. And I was just like going to fake it till I make it and figure it out. But as I went along, I was like, no, I have to be way more process oriented. Like I have to check it with the numbers, and I've got to make sure that the numbers make sense with the film. And it has to tell a complete story together. Like I need to understand the full context of each of these players before I have a, flag planting moment for any of these guys or overinvest to the point that three rosters worth of Debbie players are, not panning out. And it happens. But I mean, that's just part of it. So it's like, where do you start now just to make sure that when you're trying to roster any of these players, they have a high chance of hitting in your analysis.
I do start with the schools themselves. I know, you know, look, I'm going to be very interested in Alabama running backs. I'm going to be very interested in LSU wide receivers. I'm going to be very interested at Oklahoma quarterbacks. I do, as a teacher, I do believe in culture. I know it's not something you can quantify, but when a young man arrives on a campus in a certain situation, there is a culture that is developed. I mean, if you're an LSU wide receiver recruit, you don't think they know what that means when they walk through the locker room and there's pictures of Odell Beckham, Jarvis Landry, DJ Chark, you know, Justin Jefferson. There becomes a culture on that program that says we have success coaching this position, recruiting this position, and getting you in a position to succeed. Then what I do is I go back, well, how many stars were they? Now, it's easy at LSU, right?
In terms of like they're recruiting
receivers, right? Yes. So then Alabama would be the same thing. Now, I mentioned USC. I'm a big, and we could talk Drake London, right? And we just saw Amon-Ra St. Brown. USC has very interesting program culture of finding wide receivers. Obviously not on the level of LSU. Hey, if you and I did this podcast 8 years ago, no one's talking about Alabama receivers, my friend.
That's
true. When
Julio Jones
is an Alabama dude, we knew he was great. But look at his college fantasy football numbers. They were a running program back then. And I remember scouting Jones and like, why don't they throw to Julio more? And I had drafted him in a college fantasy football league, and I was getting beaten by guys who had group of five at Louisiana Tech or at Houston because they were throwing to these wide receivers like 100 passes a year, right? So I realized the scheme matters, right?
Absolutely.
You can take the elite wide receiver, and we all know Julio Jones is a Hall of Famer, but he went to a run-based program long before Alabama embraced this wide open, right? And
yeah.
Then they also drafted different wide receivers.
Yeah, I've got a question for you.
Yeah, yeah, go ahead.
So, and this is, and listeners, you can try to play along with this game. Last year, I opened up this podcast with a running back you, wide receiver you, and then quarterback and tight end you episode specials. Yeah. Really talking about the universities that give the NFL the most playmakers at each position. And yes, don't hear us saying we're not scouting players just based on their helmet.
No.
But like, this is a great place to start because if you look at the historical numbers by like all these positions, you can learn about a lot about where these programs are and what types of players that they are churning out at each position. But it is funny, you mentioned the Alabama thing like 8 years ago or whatever. You know how many fantasy points were scored by Alabama wide receivers like in the entire NFL in between the year 2000 and 2010?
I'm going to guess less than, that's 10 years. I'm going to bet you it's less than 2,000 fantasy points.
It is less than 100 fantasy points.
Oh my God. Holy. Yeah. I mean,
it is,
there you go.
Seriously, like there was, yeah. It was absolutely nothing. It was before nothing. Julio, there was essentially two guys that did anything. But you know, when he came into the league, he immediately changed things. And ever since Julio entered the league, there have been at least 100 fantasy points scored by Alabama wide receivers every single season. And in fact, there's been over 200 fantasy points scored every single season in the NFL by Alabama wide receivers since he came in. In fact, 6 years in a row, we've seen over 400 fantasy points scored by Alabama wide receivers. Yes, it's been trending like crazy in the past few years. But if you look at their numbers from 2000 to 2020, they're like not even top 20 in terms of fantasy points scored in the NFL.
Crazy, Travis. That's so. I agree. Look, I agree. There's no such thing. But I do believe in culture.
Absolutely.
And culture goes with recruiting, right? So once Alabama and Saban, and he has admitted this, if you saw the interview lately, I think most people have seen it, He saw the change in the scheme, right, in the wide open offense. So what does he do? He recruits the elite athlete. They weren't recruiting five-star wide receivers in 2001.
No.
They didn't care about that, right? So he was looking at linemen, linebackers, running backs, right? And then he said, Travis, I want to get five-star receivers in this program.
Nick Saban actually called me up and said, Travis?
I mean, but and now Oklahoma, come on, if you are a top, if you're a five-star recruit, are there many better positions than Lincoln Riley right now that you want to go and learn from?
Oh, no. Oh, not at all.
And then Clemson, right? What happens is the program builds, and then the recruits, I mean, do you have to really recruit if you're Lincoln Riley when he walks into your room?
No, not anymore. And their wide receiver room speaks to that. I mean, I've talked to on a couple of different shows recently just about how ridiculous their depth is that position. They're so ridiculous that they just had a top 50 overall wide receiver already come in and convert to a defensive back, like in the spring. He was like, I think I'd just rather get snaps. Like, and he's like, and I love the kid. He had 85 plus catches for 1,500 yards and a bunch of touchdowns in his final season as a wide receiver. And he was adamant about playing wide receiver even throughout the recruiting process. And he shows up to campus and looks around and goes, oh. So, I mean,
now that's the starting point. Now, I like a guy like John Metchie. I like him. He's on my Devy rankings. But I'm very open-minded. He has to show me this year a lot before I guarantee first-round draft capital, right? There's a lot for that young man to move into the first round, but he could fall into the third round if things don't go right this year for him. I'm open-minded, but I also am smart enough to say, hey, look at what he's done in a program that has produced four first-rounders in the last 2 years. And he's had a nice opening to his career. He's not knocking down doors on all-time great totals. But what if he goes out and has a 75-catch, 1,200-yard, 10-touchdown season, which is completely in the realm of outcomes for him, right? Now, he might go out and get hurt and might fall. But I'm going to look at a player like him in that program, and he's a four-star recruit. So obviously I got to consider him highly for Devy purposes, but I'm open-minded, Travis. He can rise or fall at any time, right? I'm not going to be closed-minded about it. He's got to show me something. He's not an elite five-star, hits a home run freshman year like Rondell Moore, right? He still has more to show me.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is good. I love that you mentioned, though, that you do start at the very beginning of your process with these blue blood programs that have these top five-star talent pools just constantly coming in. And even more so than ever, we're seeing that now with just this concentration of all the top skill position players going to basically six different schools.
It's crazy.
And even if they don't end up, And even at the defensive side, we're seeing with the transfer portal and the one-time transfer rule now going through, it's going to be easier and easier for these top-tier schools to just fill out their roster and get a bunch of guys that are transferring in and are going to contribute right away as well. Basically Alabama needed another, starting linebacker, and they steal essentially a top five linebacker in the country from Tennessee and Henry To'o. And so it's just, it's going to continue to happen. So, yes, don't scout the helmets, but it absolutely matters. Pedigree in recruiting and the school that they played for. It just does. If you look historically, LSU, Ohio State, USC, all three of those schools have double-digit numbers of wide receivers that have been selected in the top 100 and the top 100 drafts basically since 2015. They're bringing in a ton of talent, and that's going to continue. The same schools continue to have ridiculous success in recruiting and depth at the skill positions. So it's a great place to start. But I want to just ask you as well, you mentioned the recruiting, and I had a huge project where I scraped 15 years of recruiting data. and really dug into the hit rates of each tier of recruit pedigree. And it's not like any tier of recruit has a great chance at success because it's frankly, I mean, every player at every level, it's a long shot to make it in the NFL. But I wanted to ask you about your, you know, Power 5 versus G5, group of five, that is, research and what you found in terms of splits and draft capital before I get into some of what I found and how I start in my process.
Yeah, I actually like yours more. I think it's more in depth. You went back farther. I only went back to 2014 because that's when I started analyzing players and I have it recorded. But I did it not, and I actually wish I had done it your way by 4-star rating, 5-star rating, but I did it by group of five and power five. And why I did it this year was I said to myself, why did I miss, or what did I miss on Kenneth Dixon? What did I miss maybe on Daryl Henderson? We don't know yet the outcome of Daryl Henderson. It's still, but it's not looking great at this time. And I said to myself, well, they both were group of five running backs, right? I have to be open-minded about the fact that they come from the group of five. And I love the group of five football. You know, like I love college fantasy football, and there's so much fun in the group of five football. I said, let me look back. And this since 2014, Travis, 159 running backs have been drafted. Nice sample size. Not huge, but nice. Only 43%, 43 of them are from the group of five. That's 27% of the running backs in the NFL who were drafted are from group of five programs. So you have a 1 in 4 chance. That's not a great number, right?
No. Now, and it's not like there's like a bunch less in those conferences either. Like when we say group of five and power five, like there are 130 FBS teams, and about half and half are power five and group of five. Just the group of five don't see capital as much.
Yeah. And then what I did is I said, how many of those 43 players, and I counted like David Johnson counts more than once, in this final number, how many earn top 24 PPR results in NFL football? And Travis, we would all agree the 24th running back is not the most exciting running back in NFL football. But
most years,
but But I counted them. Only 38 of those 43 backs, only 38 top 24 seasons, 22%. What did I come to the conclusion? I'd rather draft a backup like Kenyon Drake from Alabama than Kenneth Dixon from Louisiana Tech. Because the odds tell you that a power five running back is much more likely to succeed. Now, there are two monkey wrenches in all the numbers, Austin Eckler and James Robinson, because neither one was drafted. But both of them produced a top 24 PPR season. So you almost throw, like, one thing I should do, and I might, how many undrafted free agents actually ever made it on a roster? I don't even know if I can find that number. But how rare, we kind of know. Austin Eckler and James Robinson are extremely rare, and they've each done it once. Austin Eckler 2019 and James Robinson last year, 2020. The big winners, Matt Forte did it three times from Tulane. David Johnson has actually done it four times from Northern Iowa. And then Aaron Jones. So those are, if you take out those three, Travis, the numbers are even so much worse. Yeah. So I immediately said, wow, I've got to look at power five running backs. Reality is I might find the next Matt Forte. But the odds do not tell me that I'm going to find that player.
Yeah.
And we hope to do it, right, Travis? That's what we're trying to do. And then I'm going back this summer. What made Matt Forte so different? I'm sure it's his size and his pass-catching ability. If I go look back, and I have to look back more on reports. But he had two things that not every group of five guy has, size and pass-catching. And David Johnson's the same thing. They were at group of five programs, but they had the NFL physicality, the body, the weight, right, with good hands. And maybe that's why they succeeded over all these other players. But that really got – that's why, you know what, Travis? This year, this impacted my rankings. Ramondre Stevenson moved ahead of guys who were group of five running backs in my pre-draft rankings. Ramondre Stevenson is a power five running back at Oklahoma. I know he's a JUCO, but that actually changed how I rank players. And that, I bet you your draft capital, if I looked into it, my group of five players, what are they most likely to be? 3- and 2-star recruits, right? That's, and yep, that's actually why on my running back, my Debbie rankings, you want to know where my first group of five running back is?
Where?
Jerome Ford, number 35.
Yeah. No, that makes sense though. I mean, like
everyone else is a power five.
Yep. And so really, I mean, just check boxes. I can just, we're basically kind of building our process from the ground up through this conversation here. And so, yes, we target those top schools and we look at the talent funnels and the schemes that are, you know, grinding out the best players at the skill positions that we want to target. But then we move on to this distinction of power five versus group of five. And we're not saying that group of five players can't hit, but it does matter. Like, I mean, like, yes, every once in a while you'll find a Cortland Sutton. And really, I think the community as a whole has gotten a lot better at identifying those players earlier on. But it's just that they are not as common. Like, I mean, Cortland Sutton stood out as a true sophomore, taking up like 40%+ of that offense for SMU. And we're like, oh, wow, this guy's absolutely a monster. And so I think those guys just kind of stand out in a different way. But it definitely is not as common that we see that kind of thing.
Hey, my wide receiver numbers are just here. You want to hear some quick?
Sure.
Group of five, 230 wide receivers draft. I mean, total wide receivers since 2014, 230 of them. Guess how many are from the group of five, Travis? 61.
Yeah, I was going to guess like 50.
61. Yeah. Ask me how many of those 61 have produced a season of 800 yards. Nine.
Yeah.
That's 14%.
Not great. You know, and it's funny. Like, because some of the all-time greats, like, that we think of, like, went to smaller schools, right? Like, even in like, even in this century, like, not even, like, just Jerry Rice. But, like, even, you know, even, like you
Antonio
know,
Brown is the best
Antonio
example.
Brown is Central Michigan. Like, like, that's, like, that just doesn't, it doesn't happen that often anymore.
It doesn't. Here's the guys who have been successful. Devontae Adams is by far number one.
Fresno State. Yep.
John Brown has actually been, he has three.
Pittsburgh State, right? Pittsburgh State. Yeah.
Breshad Perryman actually did it one year. But he's a success.
And he was, you know what? You mentioned that, though. UCF is actually the number one school in terms of group of five, in terms of fantasy points scored since the year 2000.
I'm not surprised because they do have good pass catchers.
Yes.
And they coach them up.
Yeah.
And they find them at that program.
Absolutely.
Then here's the others. Corey Davis, my biggest miss. Zay Jones, like just out of Eastern Carolina.
Yeah.
Absolutely has done nothing.
Yeah.
Cortland Sutton. Now, when he went to the combine and he blew it out athletically, that's why he was my number two. He was number one.
Yeah.
I had him above DJ Moore.
Yeah, so I had DJ Moore one. I think Cortland Sutton number two, I think, that year.
Yeah. So Anthony Miller, who is not hit, you know, we're up in the air, and Andy Isabella.
Yeah, man. I wanted Andy Isabella to work out, but UMass, man.
That was just...
Yeah, he had such a great profile, but, you know, he just went to a system where they just really never gave him a fair shot at targets. So we'll see if on a second contract he pops a la, you know, Emmanuel Sanders did, he did, you know, because he was basically wasted away for the Steelers in his first contract and then popped But really, another SMU guy, by the way, SMU wide receivers actually have hit over the years. And SMU is actually third among all Group of Five teams in fantasy points since the year 2000. But what's funny about them is they had zero before the year 2010. In that entire decade prior, they had, like, no scores. They've had a lot of success in the years since then. So you really just got to follow the trends, follow these programs that even aren't inside the top tier range, and just see what kind of players they're developing. What kind of positions are they getting drafted? Because odds are they're going to get good players to go there shortly thereafter because of that success. And yes, then it is then replicated again. And the best programs in the country just do it year in, year out, year over year. And if you look at the recruiting rankings, it's the same 10 to 15 teams at the top every single year. And even in how that translates to future fantasy points, if you look at the top four universities to score, in terms of NFL fantasy points, players from those universities scoring fantasy points at the next level, out of all of the fantasy points scored since the year 2000, four schools account for 13% of all fantasy points scored.
Are you... out of 130 schools,
and that's including all the weird, random, one-off schools that had a really good player and go through. Like, there are 240 plus schools that have seen a fantasy point scored in the NFL.
Because Carson Wentz,
we're counting FCS schools, like all these, like, way down the line schools. Four schools, 13% of all points. You know those four schools?
Let me see if I can guess.
Yeah, go for it.
Can I try to guess?
You're gonna get three.
Alabama, LSU, Ohio State. Is it Clemson?
So Ohio State and LSU, you got. Yeah. But when I say that this other one, you're going to be like, oh, duh, early 2000s. Miami. Miami.
Oh!
So Miami dominated from 2003 to like 2012 or so. Like, they had all that run of ridiculous running backs and, you know, 47 seasons of Frank Gore mixed in there too. And so they had, I think, eight seasons in a row where they had at least 650 fantasy points from their players scored in the NFL from 2003 to 2010. And then the fourth one is actually Florida. They've had, because they actually have a wide variety of players across every position, and not a bunch of elite top-end playmakers, but a bunch of long career guys. That kind of helped them maintain that excellence. And Alabama is actually, let's see here, they are, and it's because their entire, you know, early 2000s.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're just non-existent. They're 23rd. Like, they had, like, virtually nothing.
And they had no quarterbacks. So they weren't getting anything at the quarterback position. Yeah, that makes sense. When you think about what that program was fantasy-wise, and now how different it is.
Yeah.
You're right.
Way different. Yeah. Still kind of crazy just looking at how much that's changed over the years. And you just got to look at at the top schools first. So we're talking about, we're talking a lot of pedigree and not a lot of attributes here. But on the other side, we'll get into more of what we look for in our players and how we've improved our process and how you guys can too. But first, a word from our sponsors.
The economy is made up of real people doing real stuff, and it affects everything. Which you obviously know, since you're a real person doing real stuff. Marketplace is here to help you get smart about everything beyond the what of the day's business and economic news. We dig into the how and the why with the real people driving our economy. From big tech and interest rates to small businesses and what's happening at the Fed, Marketplace breaks it all down so you don't have to. Listen to Marketplace wherever you get your podcasts.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
And we're back. So we've already kind of covered a lot of the pedigree and schools and things we look for when it comes to top players and when we're looking for the best players to develop and translate to the pros. One more note on that, just because if you want to check out some of the work that I've done on that, it's actually my pinned tweet right now. I wrote down all of the top ranks of recruits by year, dating back to 2002, basically posted their hit rate in segments of, like, if they were ranked in the top 25 in their class, or ranked in between 26th and 50th in their class, or in between 51st and 75th in their class, and so on and so forth, all the way down to the top 800 in every single recruiting class since 2002. And I looked at their hit rates in terms of their draft capital percentages. And so it's a fun exercise just to see how much pedigree truly does matter, especially if you look at more recent classes, like from 2012 to 2016, all the classes that would have or should have been drafted through this past year's draft, even if they stayed for an extra year, 68% of players ranked in the top 25 in their draft class were drafted. And 25% of those guys were drafted in round one. Compare that to guys just outside the top 100 in their class, like players in between ranks 101 and 125, only 26% versus 68%. Only 26% were drafted, and only 4% saw round one capital. It drops off very quickly. So capital, so pedigree and recruiting, it matters. Yes, the hit rate is atrocious for every level of recruit, frankly, because when we're talking about thousands of players in every single class and only 300 players even really being considered for draft picks every single year, you're going to have a lot of misses. But it really does matter, and that's a great place to start. But beyond that, how do you build out your process? What's the next thing that you look for in your process, John? And what's the most important thing that you've really learned over the years to look for?
So I haven't broken down. So my last part of the process is my film breakdown with copious notes. What I'm doing now is I'm looking at a production model. And in that production model, I have things like 24/7 grade, 24/7 sports or rivals, but I'm just using 24/7. And then I'm looking for size and then yards per carry and receptions. Those to me right now, if I see a player and they check all those boxes, they're going to be very high in my Debbie rankings. Now, obviously with incoming freshmen, they're not going to have those yards per carry or receptions yet. I'm going more by the rankings. But I also might have them lower on my Debbie rankings because I factor in how quickly are they going to be in the NFL. Because the reality is a running back, if he's got 2 or 3 years on campus, there's a chance of an injury. We just saw how I was so pumped on George Pickens. Right? Like, I think the whole Debbie community was excited about George Pickens. He's not even going to play this year. And he suffered a pretty devastating injury. Now, he should come back. But he falls down my Debbie rankings because now we're looking at one less year of practice. Who knows if he's going? He could go pro, right? Then you're asking an NFL team to take a big leap of faith. And how's he going to recover from that injury, right? So in my rankings, if they're 3 years out, they're going to be below a very productive senior most likely, unless we have a 3 versus a 5-star recruit, because the longer they're in college, the more likelihood of an injury occurring. Does that make sense? So I put in class year. So as an example, one guy I see buzz on, and I love this player. And Travis, if you and I were sitting here 6 years ago, I would have come on and talked about him in the first 5 minutes of the show. Sincere McCormick, University of Texas, San Antonio. I would have come on here and I would have waxed poetically like Walt Whitman about how much I'm into Sincere McCormick. And I would have probably been completely wrong. Because I now look at my model and I've learned he was a 3-star recruit. He went to a group of 5 program. He's only 5'9". And he's listed at 200. And we found out with Rashad Bateman how accurate some of these listings are. So he could be 5'8", 192 for all we know, right? So he's way below my size and weight threshold. 2019, he's already been on campus for 3 years, my friend. The longer you're on campus, the less likeliness of getting very high draft capital. So I'm looking at that now. Do I like his yards per carry? 5.8? Yes. Receptions, 44. See, I would have loved him years ago. But now when I go, group of five back, a little undersized, I'm going to push him down my model. Now, does he have elusiveness? Yes, I've seen him a little bit. I was watching, I have Frank Harris. They have an interesting receiver, Zachary Franklin, if you don't know who he is. Actually, they're going to be a very exciting college football offense. And I was watching him last year, right? Is he elusive? Yes. But I also now say he's playing Conference USA linebackers.
Yeah.
He's not playing USC linebackers, right? So my visions or my eyeball test says he's elusive. My brain is saying he's playing group of five defenders. So you can't place him as high as you want. So he's my 36th Devy running back. As an example, Kenneth Walker, who transferred from Wake to Michigan State. Both of them are three-star recruits in the same class. He has nice numbers, Kenneth Walker, from Wake Forest. He's now playing for the Spartans, everyone. He's a little bigger, 5'10", 205, 5.3 yards of carry, almost no receptions. But you know what? I have Kenneth Walker ranked 32nd, Sincere McCormick 36. Why? 3 years at a Power 5 program, and Michigan State liked him enough to bring him in, right? And we know Michigan State would like to have a bell cow back. They haven't found one since Le'Veon Bell, basically, right? They really want one. But I have Kenneth Walker because my production model says he has a better chance of NFL success than Sincere McCormick.
No, that makes sense. And it's just like you're just talking about historical hit rates and building that into your process. And I think that's incredibly important. And we're not saying that a group of five players can't hit, but I think that does filter through the process. And if you look at recent draft boards, like even like colleges, the Canton leagues that draft full college rosters and full NFL rosters, if you look at like the first really 10 rounds of most drafts, like you're looking at, you know, single digit players from group of five conferences getting selected and a lot of the time. Like I think just one that I had here recently had what, 10 players drafted inside the first 10 rounds that were from group of five conferences. So it
was,
is.
Was McCormick drafted?
He was actually drafted in round 7, and Kenneth Walker dropped actually to round 10. So, and that's the variance. That's why it's funny. It's like you get 12 minds together that have access to a lot of the same information, but there's still a lot of disagreement. Once you get outside of like the first, you know, two or three rounds, you know, really 30, 40 players in college football, there's a lot of disagreement when it comes to these players. But for me, one thing that I've learned over the years is to properly weight individual aspects of any model, of any kind of singular variable that I build into my process. Because I used to value just the film side way too much. And then I think I leaned a little bit too far into the data side and relying on that and, over certain things. And that really, you know, broke me with guys like Laquan Treadwell and having like a really early breakout age, albeit like in a lower volume passing attack at the time. And then even like guys like just what 1 year ago, like with Jalen Reagor or Bryan Edwards, like, yes, it's still up in the air for either one of those. But those are both names that I think many in the community liked for a long time because they had early breakout seasons. Like Bryan Edwards, when he was not even 18 years old and he was dunking on kids in college at South Carolina as a true freshman, we were all just enamored, like ready to anoint him as king. Many people had Bryan Edwards, who is now at the Raiders, who was day two pick. They had him as the wide receiver one in their Devy rankings for multiple years. And then he ended up, you know, just not having a perfect process because, frankly, South Carolina couldn't get quarterbacks to come and play.
No quarterback.
None. No, just putrid quarterbacks. And it's same thing. Jalen Reagor, TCU. We loved, you know, Jalen Reagor, but he had to deal with like six or seven different quarterbacks that were just impossible to get him the ball. And even Max Duggan, when he was getting better last, as a true freshman, you know, in Rager's final season, it was just horrible trying to see this true freshman get him the ball. And so it's hard to properly evaluate these guys. But the guys that have these really nice early breakout seasons for programs where they're competing with virtually nobody, or like the main guy that Edwards was competing with at the time was Deebo Samuel, and he was injured for, I believe, most of that first season, which we saw him break out. So that you have to look at the whole picture and not just one production variable or one aspect of the film side. And that's how I've really helped myself avoid many misses over the years. But at the same time, even last year, I was getting suckered in ranking Rager like in my top three wide receivers. And now that looks really silly. I was really high on Justin Jefferson also, so kudos to me, I guess. But at the same time, like, to have a miss as high as I had Rager ranked, it just was a reminder again. Hey, Travis, you know that thing you tell yourself not to do and focusing in on like one production variable too much? Yeah, you did it again.
So. You know, I'll say this. I had Rager at 5, Jefferson at 3, and T. Higgins at 4. And T. Higgins, let me tell you what I learned about T. Higgins. Trust yourself. I love the film. I was huge on T. Higgins for the longest time. Then he went to the combine. And his combine wasn't great. And he fell down some. And I was like, I'm going to stay steadfast and keep T. Higgins. I believe in T. Higgins. So there are so many factors, right? You just said it, Travis. I like the film. I like the program. I like the player. He just wasn't as athletically gifted as I had hoped, right? He didn't have the Cortland Sutton day when he went to the combine. But you know what? There are football players. And I know, look, I'm a data guy too now. I mean, I've even grown to like it more. I started out as a film guy. I'm in my 50s. No one did data back in 1988. Dude, we were just looking at yards per carry and total yards, right? So I like it now, but I try to balance, and I'm not saying I'm perfect by any stretch, but I've learned there is no magic nugget of any, like, young breakout age. Well, then what do we say about Corey Davis and Bryan Edwards, right? Like, Corey Davis was insanity, but then I'm like, he was a group of five wide receiver, right? He had a good season finally, but look, how long did it take you to get payoff? Most people probably cut him, traded him. I mean, I'd love to know, Travis, how interesting would this be? How many original dynasty owners who drafted Corey Davis still had Corey Davis that many years later, right?
So I mean, basically just the Titans fans and Nick, Titans right? fans and Nick Whalen, probably.
There you go.
Shout out to Nick Whalen, because he was high on Corey Davis for a long time, even before. Yeah, exactly. Like Cortland Sutton, guys we mentioned on the show, Waylon, you know, digs deep and early with these guys. Yeah. And even if they're G5, and really they were hits in terms of capital. I mean, like the prices that you could have moved either one of those guys for early on, like when Corey Davis hit with top five NFL draft capital, like a group of five school, like that, I mean, that was unbelievable. Like he broke the mold. He was the guy who stayed an extra year, was a small school guy, didn't do anything in the combine season, and still got the capital. Like, talk about a crazy outlier in the process.
And now he's a Jet. So it's interesting. I know you're a huge Tank Bigsby fan, right?
Yes.
I know that. I follow you. So it's interesting. I like Bigsby too, don't get me wrong. But he's 2 years removed from his draft class, right? Going to the NFL.
I think I know where you're going, and I love it, by the way. I love it.
Yeah.
This is how we're going to end the show, by the way. This is going to become an entire segment. Continue.
So I'll tell you, when I see Bigsby, and I've watched him, I had him on my teams last year, and I watch Auburn. I was scouting Seth Williams and Anthony Schwartz. And I see power. I see vision. I see second-level speed. I mean, he's got the package from my eyeball test, right? Now, have I taken copious notes like I did last year with Najee Harris and Travis Etienne? I haven't yet, because he's 2 years away from the NFL. So when I'm ready to dig, that's going to take me hours to dig. But I'm smart enough to say, I've seen this young man play. He's clearly got every athletic tool that I'm looking for. Now, yes, I'd like to see him be a little bit more of a pass catcher, but that's also, look it. Jonathan Taylor wasn't a great pass catcher at Wisconsin. I think we overrate it in running backs because sometimes we have programs where you don't see it, right? They don't coach it. They don't design it. They don't spend time on it, right? So that's always a challenge. I'll tell you my biggest challenge this year, and I'm watching film now because they're coming out next year. Breece Hall and Isaiah Spiller. Those two are driving me crazy because I have them at 2 and 3 in my Debbie rankings. They're probably going to be the two top backs off the board next year. Now, anything could happen. We have a, you know, so, but right now, but I can't, I have Breece Hall ranked higher, but I'm not sure if I'm right about that. I'm darn close. The film is tough. I'm going to have to watch more of it. And I'll tell you right now, I'm going to watch a ton of live. So I'm a live note taker. I don't know if that makes any sense. I like, especially the quarterback position. I take notes as the player is engaging in the game because I've got to see how they react when the game is unfolding. Are they getting penalties for delay of clock? Do they look confused in the huddle? Are they calling plays at the line of scrimmage? Do I see audibles? All these things matter to me very much. It's about the command of the offense, and I can only get that when I watch the game. Now, same thing with blitz pickup. I can watch blitz pickup on film, but I want to see it in real time. When is that outside linebacker or safety? Are they coming? And what is the running back doing? To me, that's very important when I scout. So I'll be looking at these things for Breece Hall and Isaiah Spiller, and then I'll take more copious notes. So I'm still up in the air. Breece Hall's been unbelievable. They're both four-star recruits. They're almost the same. They're both 6'1", 215, 225. 5.3, 5.5 yards per carry. The numbers are silly. 46 receptions, 49 receptions, right? I mean, they're, and I tend to like Breece Hall just a little bit more, but I love Isaiah. So my year right now, what I'll be focusing on, I will watch at least 4 live games. And I might, sometimes I tape it, right? Does that make sense? I come home and watch it like on a Monday night. I'll watch Breece Hall and Isaiah Spiller, and I'll take copious notes at the time. Because I've got to, there's things that I need to see as the game unfolds.
Sure.
And I like that. And that's one. So one of the things, if you want to know, like held me back last year with Spencer Rattler, I thought he made a lot of game mistakes. But that's part of it because he was a redshirt freshman. So I'm willing to give him more time to grow. Like if you watch Clemson, I thought at the end Trevor Lawrence was playing a perfect football game from a mental standpoint. Yeah. I mean, he's as good as anyone I've ever seen.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. But so I guess with Tank Bigsby, with these guys that are a couple years out, you kind of shifted to like why you like the guys that are kind of closer to the draft and everything. But like if you like Tank Bigsby, but if he doesn't, what would you say if he doesn't succeed, why would that be? Because, I mean, he's a consensus first round debut pick, like a top three running back by everyone for the 2023 class. So if he doesn't work, why would that be?
The Auburn system. Something goes wrong at the school. The team falls apart under the new coach. Maybe they don't get the quarterback. Maybe Bo Nix completely fails, so he doesn't have the opportunity. I mean, I don't think it would be anything he does.
Yeah.
Right? I don't think it's going to do anything with him.
Yeah.
I think if the program slips so far that he doesn't have an opportunity to show his skills.
Sure.
But he would still be a second round pick, I would think. In the NFL.
It's hard to project that far out. And like if you talk to people that don't play in Debbie leagues or anything like that, or even people that follow the NFL draft loosely, they're like, what do you mean you're trying to predict the 2023 NFL draft? That's 2 years. What are you talking about? Like, but if you do this for very long, you get really good at understanding what the profile looks like, what the player looks like, where they play for. Like most of the time, like we can know 2 years out, like DJ Uyunglele for Clemson is a first round pick. Probably, no, I already put it in Sharpie that he is the first overall pick for 2023. But like Tank Bigsby, unless something crazy happens, He's going to be a top three running back in that class as well, because one, Brian Harsin feeds the crap out of his running backs, like 25 touches a game pretty much every single year since 2014. Like, it's going to be a big workload.
But I don't think the program would fall apart. I'm just saying.
But
that would be the scenario.
Sure. So, like, and with him, though, like, what I've learned that kind of builds out his profile. Well, Travis, what do you mean? You like him? Cool. One, he goes to a top-tier program. He's in the SEC. He has a great first year breakout and having, you know, over 1,200 all-purpose yards. He actually had, tons of rushing yards, but he also had 11 catches, and that's actually not too bad, because he was kind of phased into that aspect of the game later in the season. And then he added over 300 kick return yards as well.
That was nice.
Like that dynamic, just, hey, let's get this guy on the field. That's the kind of breakout and workload I'm looking to see. And a guy that, you know, not a blue blood program, but we just talked about him last week, that I'm willing to take earlier than most is Jahmyr Gibbs for Georgia Tech, because not having the top tier program pedigree, he was a top 100 overall recruit. He was. Yes. And he shows up at the very beginning of the season and just absolutely smashes, accounts for like 15% of the receiving game as a true freshman, and now has virtually no competition for touches for the next two seasons, again in position to succeed. And so, yes, it's about opportunity. It's about what they did in their first freshman year, because I do appreciate early breakouts at both running back and wide receiver positions.
Yeah.
I know things can change, but we can also understand the recruiting class is coming behind and the people that they're going to have to play against, and we can project these futures. So, but to round out the show here, I just want to, you know, understand a couple players that you're really high on this fall, that you think that, you know, throughout all these years of processing through this vast sea of information and projecting future NFL success, like some of the guys that you're most confident in based on how your process currently stands today, that you think you're returning to college football, that they're going to be an NFL draft pick, no doubt in your mind.
I'm going to shock you. I'll give you one for each position, my friend.
Sure. And maybe some non-obvious ones too, if you can.
Okay. Tell me if this is non-obvious then. Matt Carroll, Mississippi. I'm much higher on him than other people. I have him at number 4.
Matt Corral, Ole Miss. That Lane Kiffin offense is fun.
Dude, look it. I understand he turned the ball over. I get it, everyone. I've heard it. SEC pedigree. 4-star recruit. 6'1", 205, dual threat quarterback. Almost 5,000 yards passing, 724 yards rushing, and 44 total touchdowns. And remember, he's basically done this in a year and a half. Because if you go back to 2019, he was sharing the quarterback position. He was going back and forth.
Yeah, that was a mess.
It was a mess. If he explodes, my friend, and he could explode, Mississippi has a potential. Now, it's a brutal, I get it, it's the SEC West, right? It's tough. But what if he won 10 games out there and he ends up in the top 3 in the Heisman? The young man is going to be a first-round pick. He's got the legs. He's got the athletic ability, and this is going to be important to me. If you've listened to me on my other shows, I'm big into the touchdown and interception ratio, because to me, it shows football IQ. Right now, it's not great. I look at his touchdown interception ratio, and I'm disappointed. But that's one bullet point. I'm not going to grade any on just one single bullet point. I need to see improvement. I'm going to watch him a ton this year. This is fascinating, because his quarterback ranking is really good at 162.1, despite having a poor touchdown to interception ratio, which tells me he's throwing the ball deep down the field. He's completing a high percentage of his passes. Well, hey, the package has some really good highlights there.
It does.
And athletically, because I was scouting Elijah Moore. Look, Elijah Moore saved him at times. We could talk a whole how good he is. But Matt Carroll also made a heck of a lot of beautiful throws. He has some gumption, dude. And yeah. I like that.
He's
in
a gunslinger, man. And, you know, he does have that deeper average depth of target than you would believe. Lane Kiffin just fixed that offense quite a bit. And if you look at his adjusted yards per pass attempt, and even if you adjust for different schematic variables like play action percentage, you know, he despite that crazy fall apart game, fall apart games, he's still, by passing efficiency metrics, any way you want to slice it, was above the 80th percentile. Even with two absolute just fall apart, like one game was six interceptions, and he's still
that was a disaster.
Yeah, so if he's got some great potential to bounce back and be one of those guys, because if you one of the things I'm writing up for RotoViz here is breaking down a mix of passing efficiency and just some really simple rushing yard market share thresholds, like, you know, basically just being a positive rushing you know, a threat and a 90th percentile adjusted yards per pass attempt over expected in my model. Like, if you mix those two together, it's the most predictive draft capital model for quarterbacks I've been able to find. And then if you mix in just accounting for 5%, even just 5% of your team's rushing yard market share in your peak passing season, if you do that in your peak efficient season, like, and then you're a 90th percentile passer in terms of efficiency, like, you're basically always an automatic hit if you get. So, like, he's in that category if he has just a slight improvement in his passing efficiency, and he's going to probably get some early draft capital as well. He's one of my top few names to work into that quarterback three conversation, if not the quarterback two conversation, depending on how this season plays out. So I'm glad you brought him up. Who are some other guys that you wanted at other positions that you're really confident in?
Eric Gray, dude. I am all in on Eric Gray. Now, I watched him in Tennessee, and I liked him last year. For a young man to play in a program that, let's be honest, is kind of falling apart.
kind of. Nice, by the way.
What he's done at Tennessee in his first 2 years is simply really, really good, everyone. We're talking about a high-level efficiency running back in the tough, let's just say it, the toughest conference in the NFL. 43 receptions for Tennessee, 5.1 yards per carry, 4-star recruit, 5'10", 205. Please be 205, right? Like,
at least.
If he gets to that 210 threshold, Travis, and he looks incredibly fast on film, right? We'll go to the combine or the pro day. But I think he's going to have a huge year for Oklahoma. I think he's a second-round pick in this modern NFL because of his pass-catching ability and his overall skill set. He is explosive at the second level. What I liked is he had to deal with almost no blocking at Tennessee. You know what, man? It is going to be the parting of the Red Sea at Oklahoma at times. When he sees these holes against Big 12 defenses – with that Oklahoma offensive line, Eric Gray might have 12 or 1,300 yards rushing for the Sooners this year. I think he's crazy underrated. I love him in college fantasy football, and I love him as a Debbie asset. Now, I don't think he'll be a first-round pick. We didn't even see Javonta Williams, and we saw two, which was rare this year, right? Yeah. But I have a second-round grade on him right now. I like him a lot, man.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I think he's got a great opportunity there. I think the only way he doesn't get top tier draft capital is if for some reason, you know, he's in more of a timeshare look with Kennedy Brooks than, you know, really owning that the entirety of that offense. But man, it really looked like when down the stretch last year, the way that they operated with Ramondre Stevenson having almost 900 yards from scrimmage in six games. If he's doing that, he's gonna be in good shape.
Did you see that touchdown run in the spring game? Yeah. That was a thing.
Yeah, he's looking legit.
You know
legit.
What I like about him? I say this with my partner, Matt, on the Rookie Big Board all the time. And I don't think we talk enough about this as draft people, especially with running backs. I call it second level vision. He is amazing taking angles away from safeties and cornerbacks. When he gets into the second level, he is so good at breaking down the ankles of the second level. And he is going to see so many second level opportunities against Big 12 defenses, dude. And on that touchdown run, the safety just had no shot. Like, he just broke him down. Sure. I mean, I think that's a very underrated skill, second level vision.
Absolutely.
And the, like, Ramondre Stevenson doesn't have second level vision. He's going to try to run you over. But when I see that explosive player, oh, I love that so much. And that's Travis Etienne has it. I know you love Travis Etienne. Dude, he has that second level vision. Once he gets in the open field, you're not. It's going to be very hard to stop him.
Absolutely.
You know, now, obviously, there's some safeties who can run with him. This is the NFL. I get it. But if there was no one in the ACC who could run with him. I mean, his second level vision was silly, my friend.
Yeah, and just to round out the show here, one last player, wide receiver, maybe a non-obvious name that you're planning your flag on here that you believe is going to have an NFL future based on, you know, the most important variables that you kind of weight in your process.
I'm not sure why this young man isn't getting spoken more about. Rakeem Jarrett out of Maryland, 5-star recruit, 6'0", 200 pounds. Freshman year, you look at the broad numbers, people, 17, 252, you might say, 14.8 yards per catch in a Maryland offense that hasn't really hit the next level. I like what Coach Locksley is doing. He's bringing in high-level talent. He obviously can recruit. I mean, it's amazing what Maryland's been done if you look at their recruiting grades under Locksley. I think Rakeem Jarrett this year is going to blow up at 200 pounds in the Big Ten with a 5-star pedigree, ending up at Maryland and seeing what he did as a freshman. He's my number 9. And for me to put him up that high and still be 2 years away from NFL draft, I like him a lot, my friend.
Yeah, he's a top, really, by any measure, a top 5 freshman wide receiver from this class last year. He was a top 5 guy's recruit, a 5-star wide receiver. I had no idea why he chose Maryland, but let's be real. No idea why he chose Maryland.
No idea, brother.
But he did. And even it's a small sample, but his adjusted production index, which is a metric that for me, I built it for RotoViz. It looks at their dominator rating, yards per team pass attempt, and touchdowns per team pass attempt. Basically, their ability, a wide receiver's ability to take up a significant volume within an offense, maintain efficiency within that volume, and score touchdowns, practically speaking. But it is a small sample, but among all true freshmen last year, he was 3rd in the nation in the adjusted production index. Behind only Marvin Mims and Parker Washington. Marvin Mims, of course, of Oklahoma. Parker Washington of Penn State. Quentin Johnston's right there with him. Guys like Jordan Addison, Kayshawn Boutte, other guys that did really well last year as true freshmen by this measure. And are all those guys are on track to be day 2 NFL draft picks based on their current production arc. So I'm glad you brought up Rakeem Jarrett. The only thing that I think could hold him back is the Maryland offense, just like guys that we just kind of talked about before, like guys that we loved with their true freshman numbers, like you know, the Jalen Ragers of the world, the Brian Edwards of the world, that were in a Power 5 program. But the offense just held them back, and I think that might be the case. That would be the only thing that I could see stopping him from it just absolutely exploding in 2021. So really glad you came on the show, John. Always enlightening, always a good time just talking through these prospects, taking a look at college players, future NFL players with you. But is there anything else, anything you want to share or plug here before we sign off?
My teammate on the Rookie Big Board, the draft seminar, we actually are going to start a Devy series coming up in the summer. We're also going to be doing college fantasy football rankings in video format. Haven't really announced it to the world. So, Travis, you're getting the time we are announcing it to everyone.
Nice.
And we're going to start talking about some of these prospects. And I actually, you're going to hear it. I invented a Devy Bingo game, and we are going to be premiering the Devy Bingo for our viewers.
That's awesome. Yeah, man, Devy leagues are just fun. Being able to roster these college players on your teams before they're in the NFL. Yeah, I mean, it's just great. And it's great to see it growing and college fantasy continuing to grow as well. But John, I really appreciate you as always. Again, you can find him on Twitter at GridironSkull91. and find his work. I mean, actually, the best place to find all his work is really just through that on Twitter.
Yeah.
But you can follow me again. I'm Travis May on Twitter at FF underscore Travis M. And if you want to leave a question in a 5-star review, my feelings would not be hurt at all if you wanted to do that. And I hope you guys are enjoying this rookie draft season and the summer. And I hopefully we have a bunch more information and new stuff to talk about in the coming weeks. But we'll be talking a bunch more college football, NFL all summer long. So I look forward to you joining me here soon for many more episodes of the College Again podcast.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.